Wow, I can see everything clearly now.
Do you have what do you call it? Bifocal? Do you have bifocal now? Because
Have
you're
no idea. I have I don't I need to wear these for at the desk. It's different from farsight. Like I don't need them outside. I can perfectly see clear in the distance, but not like 70 centimeters.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I actually need glasses for a while, but now, when I put them on and I see the screen, then I realize how bad it was, like how blurry actually I was looking at
Surely there's
things.
a way around that, like just having a bigger screen and bigger fonts and
I definitely
since.
had like th situations where I woke up and I just was like, oh, I can't be bothered with this right now. Just up the font size. And then later on during the day, I didn't even realize that I've been, working with the font size like this big.
Huge. Cool, man. So now you can see better, you can feel better, you can work better.
It's like I'm wearing binoculars, dude. It's like the screen is like suddenly right in front of my face.
What? I think I have the opposite problem. I see better near without my glasses. Yeah. Oh, so I was just trying to add to the AI infrastructure podcast notes about what to talk about. I wish I did this a bit earlier.
Haven't really been adding anything there for a while.
There's been a
It's quite a
lot.
lot of announcements, right? Yeah.
There's been a lot. I guess
I don't have a lot of time though. Oh.
you're all in on Claude, so I guess you haven't even bothered with OpenAI stuff.
They gave me, because I was one of those people that unsubscribed after the whole
Move to
Department of
Claude.
War situation.
Oh.
I went to
You.
ChatGPT and canceled, but then they said we'll give you a month for free, so I still have access for a month. And now people are all raving about 5.4 being fine-tuned for coding and being so much better.
Well, I don't think they've released GPT 5.4 Codex. Codex is the one that's
But
optimized.
they believe it won't, because they basically integrated the fine-tuning from Codex into it. And kind of reduce the confusion
Oh, really?
That's at least that's Theo's theory, right? I did watch Theo first
Oh,
10
this
minutes.
is where you get the news. Well,
It to
that's
me
really
it makes
cool.
sense, because like all of this additional terminology, people were getting super confused. If you were opening your LLM model selection, it was like 20 GPT options. GPT 5.2, 5.3, 5.3 thinking, 5.3 Codex, 5.3 Codex Ultra think. It's like, what are you doing?
So I'm different models. So I wanted to ask you about, do you use one model against another in your workflow? I mean, you showed me like months ago that you were doing something like that, like
Yeah, I was,
working with
because I was
Claude and
running out
getting
of credits.
Gemini. Sorry?
I was because the problem was I was always running out of credits on cloud, right?
Oh yeah, that's true. You're doing it as a means of necessity.
Yeah,
Well,
but now I haven't even been able to, hit my budget limits on cloud.
yeah, so that's interesting. So you were using multi-agents because you're running out of credits. Though I'm thinking using multiple different models might
Different
be,
strengths.
yeah, it might be a quality gain, because I was actually a little bit shocked. I had this experience last week where I created a PR. Of course, other people approved it without asking too many questions, or I mean, it's human approval, what do you expect?
Of your
And
track record.
then I noticed that like if I was actually less trustful of AI and I honestly looked at this patch that I was contributing, I would have realized there was a terrible mistake. It was such an obvious mistake, really. Like I used env instead of environment for a GitHub workflow. And of course I didn't really test it because it was kind of a trivial change. But anyway, long story short, this PR that I pushed that was AI generated was wrong. And now that's just making me very, it's just sort of like ripped my confidence apart. And I'm just thinking, like, what practical steps can I do to make sure I don't commit junk?
This has always been the job of CI/CD DevOps people. Like my job pretty much all the time is to set up linters, pre-commit, and all this type of stuff. Whatever I can deterministically validate.
Yeah, that's the trick. Making AI deterministic, or making what AI does deterministic. The trouble is that maybe I'm just casting shade on GitHub, but like GitHub Actions is such a pain. The difficulty
You know what was
validate
interesting
the, there's
also?
action lint, but it doesn't capture like half the problems. It doesn't support like actions and
I had the similar situation on Friday where I was working on something related to a Docker image. And yes, I remember. We need to do immutable digest pins on the Docker base images. So when we build using a
Oh,
Docker
really? So
file,
you're in a secure environment, are you? What?
yeah. So we have like the .NET 4 8.0 tag, which is immutable because security patches and so on. Right? When Microsoft builds a new version, they just push it under that 8.0 tag, even though it's a different image. So they
Yeah.
don't accept that. So they were like, you need to use an immutable digest. And then I was like, yeah, that's a pain because now we have to do a schedule to always check if there's a new digest and bump or base images, right? It's kind of like security, like checklist security, like, dude, we're consuming from Microsoft.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, there's supply chain attacks that can,
Yeah,
inject.
I'm not a fan of these immutable hashes on Docker things.
Yeah,
But
but like
what
if Microsoft's been compromised and their 8.0.NET image is insecure, and therefore you're saying we cannot have. I think this is the type of nonsense,
Yeah.
type of security because you're actually aggravating the issue because now you dis expect the client to adequately keep up to
Yeah.
up. Yeah. Anyway, the point was that with Sonnet we had built a beautiful GitHub workflow that was tested against Brew installed Docker BuildX image tools to inspect the digest for the remote image to figure out if we were using the if there was a new digest. And before I actually, moved the PR from draft to review ready, I asked Sonay, hey, we can test this. We can run the Docker Ubuntu image here, and we can run the commands that you have in the GitHub Actions workflow. We can run it inside a local Docker image,
Yeah.
Ubuntu, and it did that, and it immediately broke. And there were all kinds of problems with it because it was a multi-arc digest, and it wasn't detecting the digest properly. It was using a template string,
Oh, because
and
you
that
had
didn't
different
work.
arcs or something, or.
Yeah, and then also it was using the Docker BuildX 0.19, whereas in the Docker that was on my local then. It says, oh, it fails. I should do an awk instead of trying to use a temp because when you do Golang like Docker, you can do these template strings to extract certain fields. So
Oh,
you can do Docker inspect and then you can pass in a template string and it will expect it. But the thing was, it didn't work, and then I assumed it was because it was using the wrong version. And I said, you're using 0.19, the latest is 0.26, and the GitHub Actions is using 0.26, and it tried that, it didn't work. Anyway, the point is, yeah, I got so much things wrong. And even today, when I was like, let's use a make target. So this is another very stupid security problem where we have Sonar Cube that lints Bash script, and I am vendoring a third party
Vendoring,
supplier.
vendoring, okay, vendoring.
Vendoring, meaning I'm inlining it into my Git because I don't want to do a curl during my build. I want to use an install
Okay,
script. And when in my pull request, it was flagged with 32 Sonar Cube issues. And if I fix them, then the next time I pull the vendor, next time I update from the vendor script, I'm going to have the same problem, right? So I want to like allow listed. I can't say whitelist, right? I have to say allow listed.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
I'm very
The
mindful.
audience appreciates this.
Yeah, so I have to I have I have to there, I mean to me the right way is to vendor it and git track it, allow list it, But that's going to take time because I'm in this organization, not an admin. So I have to wait for someone else to whitelist it. So anyway, I says let's use a make target, and let's make sure that we actually do the insecure thing, which is we curl it. And with make targets, you can specify a file on disk, and if it doesn't exist,
Yeah,
it
it'll
will
recreate
basically
it.
run the commands, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it will keep it
I'm
even like
the
a.
number one Makefile fan here.
Yeah, so but the thing is, when I asked Sonnet or Opus, I think it was Opus 4.6, and I said let's use a make target, it came up with all these phony make targets to do ensure local or whatever, and I was like, you don't need to do that. That's not how make file works. You can point it to a
Yeah.
file target, and then it was like, oh, you're absolutely right. But you see, like, because I know make file, I know what to tell it. Like, I know
Yeah.
this makes no sense.
It's funny how Makefiles trip up a lot of people and AI in some ways, but
So
I think
I was almighty. I was like, ha ha, look at AI. You can't be just a stupid vibe coder. You have to know how make files work. At the same time, I was wondering, the issue really is the make file, though. Like, if make file wasn't this so cryptic.
Oh, have you heard of Redo, by the way? I
Just
sometimes use
or
Redo in my projects.
you were just talking about you did
Okay,
all your
fine.
skills with Just or something like that, right?
No, not just. I used Redo. It's
Okay.
called. It's a DJP. Anyway, so going back to the quality thing. Okay, I'm with you 1,000% that we should do less things in GitHub Actions. Do more make files. That's what I'm. That's my mantra
That's
going
not what I
forward.
said, though. I just said
Well, I'm reading into
that
what
we
you're
can
saying.
validate some of it. For
Yeah,
example,
make
we are
things
on Darwin.
deterministic.
We can validate. We can ask the AI to do a little extra and say, like, it all looks good, and we can push it and see it pass. But even then, we're not 100% sure. We can still use local Docker VMs with Linux and try to use that to reproduce an Ubuntu
Oh, by the way, I wanted to
environment.
say on the subject of pinning, the one good thing about pinning in a Docker image is that you're likely to speed up your Docker builds because,
Using caches and things.
yeah, you're more, that's one sort of
Yeah,
benefit of the churn.
but you were basically you started saying that it's hard to trust the AI outputs because we can still miss things, and how do we validate it?
Yeah.
But
So,
have
I
you
mean,
seen Adam Jacobs' latest LinkedIn posts about that? I think he's been saying the same thing like quite a few times. Which is like it's difficult to be in this, like, what's it called, the twilight zone, the where you are still validating, like you have a lot of manual code and you still want to control what the AI output is, and you're actually validating the code versus you're not validating the output, you're not validating the result, and he had quite a few posts where he was going on about how people have a difficulty letting go of the code. And I mean, something we've been discussing a lot as well. And I kept telling you, like, as long as we put the deterministic checks around it, then we can
I
do
don't
a lot more.
understand the. Oh, here, I think this is how you do it.
Yeah.
I don't understand LinkedIn.
There was
So, yeah, I mean,
a little.
there's definitely like people who are into AI and cranking it out.
This one about Nick's, like, I've been programming for literally my entire life. There's that one, I think he's talking about the fact that it's really a big mind shift. It wasn't that. Adam, actually, a couple of reflections, that one. Couple of reflections, the third one below from Adam, that one. Yeah, that's where he goes on and says, like, it's hard to, if you have an existing large code base, it's hard to let AI go wild on that code base. And it's more easy to just start from scratch and let AI build everything and just build all the loops around it. And that made me think, I think the first thing we need to do when we are adopting AI into a code base is to ask AI to validate all of the user stories and build a very strong build harness. Don't let AI build, like, modify the code. Let AI build all of the validation and make sure that the validation is correct before you let AI loose on the code. I think that's definitely a
So
way
I
to.
my colleague was using AI with some database flows, and what I th and he's a very seasoned colleague. He's been around the block. He's been hacking since the 80s, sort of thing. And I don't know. Maybe he's listening to different podcasts and getting his information from different sources. But I was really impressed that he, like, what do you, th what he did was that he set up like a flow where he was using different personas. Like he was saying, like, I am a business analyst and I want this thing, and then I am a database designer and I want this thing. I am a QA engineer and I want this thing. And then he basically ran the problem through these three agents' profiles to do his work. And I thought it was very impressive the way he did that. I mean, have you thought about personas in your spec ledger and things like that? Do you
No, but
use
there
like
is quite a few
I am a
people.
quality assurance engineer?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't like it. They say it's like theatrics. It's like you're going to a play and it's like, I'm playing house and balls with my like daughter. But
Though I do, I think the probably the benefit really is that you have like a fresh context in two or three different agents just to
oh
cover the
yeah, for sure.
bases.
I think people underestimate how effective it is. I think because of these things are large language models, the context and that you create around them and clearing the context and having it with different perspective, like creating these personas, I think
Yeah.
it makes sense. I don't think we
So
understand.
you've not
I
implemented
don't
it
do
in
that,
your.
no. I've also many people are yeah, like I just said, people don't really like that, but I think it makes sense that I'm not going to do that at the moment. For me right now, because there's quite a few announcements lately that really affect Spec Ledger's position a lot. One is Anthropic announcing like a config management as a service so that you can share configurations for cloud code. That's something that they launched. They added the scheduling. So people are saying, oh, Anthropic just launched OpenClaw clone by making cloud code run independently and can run scheduled tasks, which is a bit like one of the aspects of
Yeah, all these.
OpenClaw.
I'm actually
Another
kind of
thing
surprised
is
how long that it's taken. Like, I still think Claude and Codex doesn't make it super easy to share things in an organization
yeah,
between your.
so that's what Spec Ledger does, right? I mean, we have a super-based metadata where we are allowing organizations to create skill bundles. I think Tassel apparently does that as well. I didn't know, but like Tassel, they are not like we are
But it's
the
not a.
skill bundle solution. But to
Not to
me,
belittle anything, but I don't think it's like a huge problem to share the prompts, but like it's
yeah,
a whole
absolutely,
it's
absolutely.
become an industry in itself.
It's just one of those little things, It's just one of those things you easily tack on. If you're gonna provide a spec ledger flow and you're gonna create a UI that allows you to visualize the process, might as well include, skill bundles, might as well include, part of the bootstrap of the repo. That's part of like some organizations, they call it AI readiness of a repository. Across teams, you need to set up your repos so that they are ready for AI contributions so that anyone who starts working into it gets the best practice, gets the skills to set up the, everything properly.
Talking about that and best practices and documentation, the one good thing at work is that it just took some convincing, I feel. Took some posturing, but I think I have the mandate to move everything from Confluence or POC, Confluence to Markdown. I don't know if I've shown you this before, but like, yeah, basically, I feel this is going to make my life a lot easier. I
Yeah.
hope you agree. Moving
Yeah.
away from Atlassian is the sweetest AI move you can make, really.
I say that, but then I spend the whole morning create like playing with the Jira CLI Golang and writing a skill for, but I wrote a skill very explicitly customized for all the custom fields and all the custom workflows for one board and one team that
Oh,
I'm in,
you don't
right?
use the Atlassian MCP? Oh no, you don't like MCP.
I don't like MCPs.
It does work really well, this particular one, this superset.
Okay.
Though it's got some blind sides, like it doesn't work with what do you call these boards, white spaces? I'm not too sure what they
Yeah,
call them.
so I guess it wouldn't work for me because that's exactly what I just did. I just took the Golang CLI, that's like the most popular one, and apparently hasn't received PR merge. So I forked it, added the PRs and
Is it able to understand a blackboard? I don't know what it's called in Atlassian. A
oh,
whiteboard.
maybe we're talking about a different thing. Like a Kanban board is not the same as a whiteboard.
Oh, no.
No. No, I
This
didn't.
supports everything except a whiteboard, and
Okay.
it's really good. But I do notice that sometimes it struggles to do the markdown inside Jira, because Jira markdown has always been insane.
I was very surprised because I always struggle with Jira Markdown, and then I see Claude Sonnet or Opus create Jira tickets and with all these .h4 and all, I'm like, what the hell is that? And then it just creates the tickets and I go, oh, that looks good. It's pretty
Okay.
crazy.
Okay, you need to share this skill with me, but I'm pretty happy using this.
I asked Opus to highlight any sensitive info, and it was like, enumeration of projects, enumeration of statuses, enumeration, like, don't share this. I was like, okay, I won't share it. I was like,
Okay.
AI, can I open source this? And it was like, no. I was like, okay. I don't even
Right.
ask myself anymore.
Well, I'm not sure I've shared this with you before, but I'm looking forward to rewriting a lot of, well, not rewriting, just dumping Confluence to
That would be
Markdown.
nice.
And then I suppose just to make it agent friendly, to make it like goal orientated, so that so that the agents will know what to do, considering this platform that I'm working on is
That's a
pretty
big
complicated.
improvement.
It's going to be a massive improvement, I feel,
Yeah.
trying not to big it up too much. But it's just so nice to work in a sensible way, like with Markdown, and being able to easily edit things. Because just the act of updating documentation in Confluence is such a nightmare. I'm just sick of it.
For me, right now, my focus is to maximize my output, but also stay reasonable, healthy. So I'm more of like in the AI is a vampire chart. I'm close to the first group of, I'm not trying to burn out, but I'm trying to achieve slightly more than what I would be able to do if I was working full time, myself. So I'm trying to use AI to just hit more than what my regular output, but not insane, not like 10x,
Well,
for different, yeah.
yeah, I guess
So and then
I'm more in
I
the,
try to do this for the next few months before, I don't know,
yeah, I
organizations
mean,
fire
I'm
everyone.
feeling pretty rugged, really, in a, though, I am sort of trying to take a step back. I'm trying to be that force multiplier where I onboard my colleagues and with my learnings of AI, just simple stuff like if we just put our documentation AI and then reference that documentation when we want something to be done, then we'll get there in a more reliable fashion. As for like building things, I'm definitely not on your wavelength at the moment, just because. Well,
I've taken a step back, I think, for the last
oh, that
four
reminds me.
days,
I
four or
need to
five
do that
days.
blog. I'll do that.
Yeah.
I'll do that blog this morning.
SEO
Yeah,
strategy. It's so funny
you
when
should
you.
focus on CDKTF, because I think it's there is a need for it, actually. There is a need.
Yeah. I just spent a weekend
Oh yeah, doing what?
brainstorming on how to incorporate the L2 library. So I have Terra constructs, right? But I feel the name is too close to Terraform, and I feel the CDK terrain should have its own L2 library. I intend, so Terra constructs is more like a, it's more like a proof of concept. It shows that if you build those L2 constructs and you can port them from AWS CDK, it works really well. And now I want to port that effort and maybe start again, but under a new name which is aligned with CDK terrain. So I was like brainstorming names, like what is the L2
I
concept? Is it
assume that
stratum?
you must have
Is
had
it
some level twos in there already somewhere. I just haven't looked.
in
There's no
CDK
level
terrain?
two. Yeah.
CDK terrain doesn't really do level twos, right? It just does the initial, sorry, it does the initial L1 bindings. And then Terra Construct is the full L2 library. And I always wanted to keep them separate
Yeah,
because
maybe you're
everyone
right.
has built their own.
Yeah, when I
Yeah.
think about it, you're right.
There's a few, like there's the concept of an archive. Oh, but you asked me a question. You asked me about like what is the difference between CDKTF CLI and why would you run the CLI versus
Oh
running
yeah.
the synth directly? And I was going on about it's the asset pipeline. It's the asset pipeline.
Yeah, and you're gonna show me how dumb I am about this.
You caught me in a bad time.
Well, okay, can I just explain my problem, just so that you may just let me just explain what I'm trying to do. we have a whole bunch of CDK, and I want to refactor it so that,
Is it CDK, AWS CDK, right?
it's AWS CDK, but I feel this
Okay.
is the CDK problem that ha would probably happen in CDK TF, whatever. So we have many business divisions. Let's say that there's 10, like it could be, I don't know, HR, commercial, whatever. And each of them has their own dev staging prod. And with all these different domains, there's lots of shared CDK stacks. And while we've been bootstrapping them, we've been just copying files across because symlinks are unfortunately a dark art, and people don't want to use symlinks. So we've been copying files, and then over time, each file has been slightly changed or got some white space or what have you. So we have like 10 sort of duplicated CDK apps, I think is the correct term, and we want to deduplicate it. So, but already each domain is quite complicated. So I wanted to create like a shared library, and then when I refactor some stuff into a shared library, that when I do a CDK synth, that I know it's the same in a sense. Because one thing that bit me with CDK refactoring is that I didn't realize that, at least in Python, that if you like put it in a different class, then the name changes. Because
Yeah.
I mean, that caught me out. So basically, I'm having to rejig it again. But what I don't want, I mean,
I
I
think
think
that
it's,
will be very
I think it,
difficult with AWS CDK.
what I'm trying to do is not have all these updates and deletes, because I just
Yeah.
hate doing that. So
So coming
basically,
from a
I'm
Terraform
doing a CDK
background,
synth, and I'm like comparing it before and after to make sure that my
right?
refactor
Yeah,
is a good one.
exactly. So yeah, I see refactoring, which in Terraform is a non-issue, right? Because you change it and then you just put in a refactoring configuration and it takes care of the logical ID changes. What you just described is your logical ID of the resources change, but physically the resources shouldn't change. They shouldn't be deleted and recreated, right?
Well, why
There's
is it
a
so
it's
easy
it's
in
a
Terraform? I've seen some people
because
get.
Terraform state is accessible, you can modify it. CloudFormation is not. They added a lot
What do
of
you mean, like modify
CloudFormation.
with an import or something like that? What do
Yeah,
you
you
mean?
can, like, basically for me, right? When I change my CDK TF drastically and I get the problem that you have, which is it's gonna like change all the logical identities, I actually have a script that reads, I have two. I have one that reads the Terraform plan diff and sees what it's gonna create and what it's gonna delete. It parses out the resource type and the logic ID and it tries to map them. If you have one resource type, exactly one create, one delete, it will map it 1 to 1, right? So say that's one that's exactly the same one that you deleted and created, and it's gonna generate a move block for you. It's gonna go, if you have three deletes and three creates, it's gonna sort them alphabetically and try to map them and say like those three they match. Most likely these are the way that they match, but maybe that's wrong. It's put a big fat comment in the top says review this because I could get this wrong. And then the one, if it's asynchronous, like there's two deletes and there's one create, then one of them is deleted and one is kept. So which one do you want to create? You have to validate that. So that's what my Python script does that I created with Opus like 3 years ago. And you can do that very easily with Terraform. You can parse the plans, you can generate those refactor blocks. If you do that with AWS CDK, it was 3 years ago very, very hard. I literally, people usually just delete the stacks and recreate them because modifying a CloudFormation stack is extremely hard. But they did create a whole bunch of refactoring tools around CloudFormation that I never used in the
Oh,
last
really?
3 years.
Oh, this is
I
interesting.
have no idea, but yes, there's a bunch of announcements around that.
Really?
So this is where I would be looking if I was you. If you need to do these massive code refactoring, and you can also Google for people facing issues with AWS CloudFormation around and CDK specifically about logical IDs.
I
Because
never
the
thought
moment
to
you
search.
change things, the logic ID changes and then CloudFormation loses track of it. And it says that thing
Holy
doesn't exist
moly,
anymore.
I feel like an idiot. I mean, I've had this problem for a while, and I didn't actually care to do a
Google it.
basic AWS CDK
Refactoring, yes.
refactor search.
I said 3 years, but it's from September, so it's not it's just 10 months. So this is the thing about
Ten months
CloudFormation
is
playing
three
catch up.
years in AI.
Yeah. This is the problem with CloudFormation playing catch up with Terraform, right? I mean, that's why I convince people that I think CDK TF is better than AWS CDK, because these things only come into AWS, like in CloudFormation now. Well, Terraform started out with these things. Well, not really. The refactoring has only been there maybe for 4 years.
Holy moly,
Like being able.
why didn't I bloody Google?
Yeah. But come back to the reason why I was being so annoying to you about the pipeline. I
You
can
just
share
don't
with
get
you.
it. You just don't get it.
Yeah, I'll show you what I think. Maybe we'll explain it, but then I have to go because I have another call.
Okay.
So I'll just share this real quick. So, can you see this? Like,
Oh yeah.
so what I'm doing here is a comparison between CDK TF and AWS CDK because a lot of people don't really understand what's the difference between them, right? So AWS CDK and CDK TF, they both are a command line interface, and one orchestrates Terraform execution a little bit, and the other one orchestrates CloudFormation, right? You will agree to that, right? Yeah. Both of them have L1 constructs. So when you use AWS CDK inside, there's a whole library of the L1 resources that are directly the CloudFormation resources. For CDK TF, you have the same thing. You can build the L1 constructs, which are basically one-to-one. So if you have Terraform provider AWS, it has a resource called AWS instance. There will be an L1 construct called AWS inst or just instance, and you can use that to create an AWS instance configuration block in Terraform, right? The same thing, CFN resources, they also have an L1. So that's actually nothing special. Now, the big difference is that AWS CDK has an advanced asset pipeline, which includes bundling. What
Yeah,
that means
the
is,
asset pipeline, which sometimes I feel shouldn't be there because it creates really annoying devs, but carry on.
the asset pipeline does things like if you have a Lambda function and it needs
Yep, it
Python,
builds the layer and everything. Yeah, it's nice.
it can do the layering, it can package up, like if you have JavaScript or Node.js, package.json with dependencies, it can identify automatically that you're deploying into a Lambda layer or into a Lambda function runtime that supports AWS SDK version 3, and it will make those external. So when you bundle things up, it's going to automatically make sure that it doesn't bundle in the AWS SDK for you. It does a lot of amazing things. You get
Yeah.
none of that in Terraform world, right? Unless you build
It
it
could be
with your Bash
more
script.
amazing. I feel like at work we have a few stacks that build a lot of Lambda layers and I don't, maybe there's a trick, but I would like to say like these Lambda layers are all effectively the same. Can you just make them shared
Yeah,
so
and
that
if
you
you look
don't
at the
have to rebuild
construct,
everyone?
so there's an amazing open source project from the AWS CDK team, an internal team at AWS that built the construct hub. So if you go to constructs.dev or construct.dev, you can see every single package on npm.js that have constructs. If they are tagged and licensed properly, they get automatically indexed and they have a nice documentation page made available. So this hub thing, right? It runs an data ETL pipeline, and I think I really have to go. But that thing runs a pipeline, and it runs off a bunch of step functions and lambdas. And inside that repo, if you go to the source code, you can actually see that they use ProGen to generate a special lambda function generator that then bundles the code appropriately. So exactly what you just said, they build it in
ProGen.
there. Yeah,
Okay,
ProGen is a tool that manages. It's like CDK for file systems. So you can define a file construct, and you can define.
I'll have to have a look at it. Okay, if you have to go, you have to go. So thanks.
So that's the main difference. AWS CDK does so much more, and CDK TF does only the very basic. The asset pipeline is actually, it has the concept of an archive, but that's not bound to like any provider because Terraform is decoupled from AWS, right? So if you do AWS CDK, if you say an asset, it will use ECR and S3 for you behind the
Yeah,
scene.
I mean
But for
that could be
CDK
a benefit
TF,
because I do prefer BASIC in a way. I do prefer zip files than Docker
you
images,
do until you don't. You do until it's done for you, and then you say, oh my God, I wish I had this sooner.
Yeah,
Okay.
the trouble with
Hey,
zip files
so.
is that SNCC doesn't seem to like them or whatever security bloody thing people
Oh,
use.
then you just base64 save them, zip them again, 64 them, zip them again. Then no security scanner will detect it. Okay. All right,
What?
I have to drop. All
Okay, thanks,
right.
Vincent. See you, man.
See you. Bye.
Well, it's just me, and I will publish as a podcast. And if you're listening to this podcast, thank you. And comment and like. I wanted to remind you that if you got this far, well done. Though we also do have summaries on debase.com podcast. And yeah, please comment, please get in touch if you like the podcast, so I can keep on being motivated to get up really early and do it. Though at the same time, it's just great to chat with Vincent and have an excuse to do that, because I'm always learning. I hope you agree, well, that I'm learning, and I hope that you picked up something yourself. Cool beans. Have a great day. Have a great week. Get in touch.